The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
The Knicks up by three. 10 seconds left in game five. Maxey fires! He's got it! Tie game! 8.1 to play. 41 for Maxey. 3 seconds left. Brunson, 2 seconds. Brunson at the horn! It's blocked! Overtime at the Garden! Philadelphia is not done yet. Tyrese Maxey comes through in the clutch.
The NBA playoffs, boys. The NBA playoffs. I know some of you know what I'm talking about, but I do have a sense that the majority of you listening don't really care. But you should if you're a sports fan. The game last night at Madison Square Garden was ridiculous. The show's presenting sponsor, as always, is Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name for a free, no obligation, in-home quote. We are going to talk some NBA playoffs today on the show. Now, I'm not going to do it much here in this opening segment because Warren Sharp is going to jump on with me in just a few minutes, a longtime NFL analyst. Warren evaluates the draft. Right when it's over. He's got a way of doing it. I've referenced it in the past. Warren Sharp coming up in just a few minutes. But then, my guy Michael Lee. We've had some good debates over the years. Love talking NBA basketball with Michael Lee from the Washington Post. He'll be on the show. We'll talk some football with Michael, too. I promise you. He did a very good profile piece months ago on Caleb Williams. So I know he has followed the NFL draft and the quarterbacks specifically that went in the first round. So we'll get his thoughts on Jaden Daniels. Look, the game last night, in a nutshell, was another one of these incredibly dramatic, intense games. They don't resemble regular season NBA games at all. It's a completely different sport in the postseason. Tyrese Maxey, 46 points in 52 minutes, had 7 in the final 28 seconds when his team was about to be eliminated at Madison Square Garden by the Knicks in 5 games. It was Reggie Miller-esque what he did. Maxey's one of those emerging superstars in the game, young superstars in the game. The game went to overtime. You heard Ian Eagle's call of the Maxey three. It was a 34-foot three that tied it, and then they won the game in overtime with Joel Embiid playing 48 minutes with Bell's palsy, a migraine, and a hurt knee. He wasn't great in the game, but he was great in overtime, actually. He made a couple of big plays, including the block shot at the end of regulation. But, man, a warrior last night to be out there for 48 minutes with all that he has been suffering through. But, yeah, the NBA playoffs have been great so far. I will be up late tonight watching Mavericks Clippers. Why don't some of you join me? In fact, let me suggest a place you can watch NBA playoff basketball. How about Shelly's Back Room? Tommy's Place, 1331 F Street, Northwest. Great bar, great menu, great cigars, great friends. All you have to do is say you know Tommy and they'll take really good care of you. And remember, Monday night, this coming Monday night, 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. at Shelly's Back Room, 1331 F Street, Northwest. Tommy's Cigars and Curveballs auction event. Join us for an evening of cigars, baseball, and support for the DC Grays, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide opportunities for college baseball players to develop their skills and give inner city youth a chance to learn the great game of baseball. This is an incredible night. It is many years now running. There will be people, real people that you recognize there. Doc Walker will be there. Mike Rizzo, Davey Martinez expected to stop by. Tommy is in rare form on this night as the host of his event. It's a great event. Shelley's Back Room, Monday night, May 6th, 6 to 8 p.m. Be there. I'll be there as well. For tickets, go to dcgrays.com to purchase. You can also purchase tickets at the door if you decide last minute you want to head down there. But Shelley's Back Room is the best, and we appreciate always their support. So before I get to Warren Sharp, I wanted to read this quick note. It came from Kevin. Kevin said, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Sam Hartman being signed for a major guaranteed contract for an undrafted free agent. What do you think it means? So I think we talked a little bit about some of the undrafted free agents, but that's fair. I didn't spend a lot of time on Sam Hartman. And Kevin, you're right. Washington gave Hartman one of the biggest guarantees among undrafted free agents. $20,000 signing bonus, $225,000 guaranteed base salary. And this is, to me, an indication that Sam Hartman has a really good chance to be the third quarterback on the roster in 2024. They have Jaden Daniels. They have Marcus Mariota, as you know. Jeff Driscoll and Jake Fromm also on the roster. It would not surprise me if one of those two is released before training camp. I don't know that you're going to have five quarterbacks brought into camp, and there are about 92 or 93 players on the roster right now. You can only go to camp with 90. So there will be players that will be cut loose, a couple of them, and I would expect one of them to be Fromm or Driscoll. But Sam Hartman's an interesting quarterback. For those of you who don't know much about Sam Hartman's career, Sam Hartman was in college football, it just seemed like forever. First of all, Sam Hartman didn't get drafted. People thought he had a chance to get drafted on day three. You know, we didn't talk about this. After the six quarterbacks got taken in the first 12 picks, Williams, Daniels, May, Penix Jr., McCarthy, and Nix, there wasn't another quarterback taken until the fifth round on Saturday, and that was Spencer Rattler, picked by the Saints as the 15th pick in the fifth round. So basically four rounds went by after Bo Nix became the record-setting sixth quarterback taken in 12 slots last Thursday night. Spencer Rattler, there was a lot that was discussed about Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma and some of the issues he had as a teammate, but there was a lot written about that and a lot written or updated that he had become a much more mature player at South Carolina. And a lot of people thought he had a chance to go even before Bo Nix, not in the first round, but perhaps sometime in the second round. But he didn't go until the fifth round. Jordan Travis, who broke his leg for Florida State, or they would have been in the playoff, he got selected in the fifth round by the Jets. Joe Milton, the big-armed quarterback from Tennessee, who was at Michigan, ended up with New England in the sixth round. Devin Leary from Kentucky went to Baltimore in the sixth round. And then Michael Pratt, the Tulane quarterback, was a seventh-round selection by the Packers. Michael Pratt was one of those quarterbacks. I actually, on the day three quarterback conversation, whenever we had it, I gave you Keaton Slovis, the quarterback from BYU who was with Pitt and prior to that with USC. I actually thought he would get drafted on day three, and there's just something about him that I thought made sense for a team to look at. He was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Colts. Pratt, I remember saying, I don't get the people that think that he is a night two pick. There were some discussions about Pratt. I forget exactly where he was projected. He was definitely projected earlier than the seventh round. But anyway, back to Sam Hartman. So he wasn't drafted. Sam Hartman had a six-year college career. COVID, obviously, in 2020. But he ended up playing his sixth and final year at Notre Dame. Last year, he went into the portal. I remember a lot of Sam Hartman's games at Wake Forest, man. They were a prolific offensive team with him at quarterback. He was dual threat. He was RPO. A lot of that slow mesh read option, if you know what I'm talking about, the teams that ride out the fake handoff part of the zone read for what seems like forever. And Sam Hartman was so good at running that slow mesh read option. I mean, that ball was held in that running back's gut forever. And he'd pull it and either run it, pull it, leave it there, or pull it and throw it. He threw for 39 touchdowns and ran for 11 in 2021 in a season in which Wake went 11-3. They lost the ACC title game to Pitt and Kenny Pickett, by the way. But he had some massive games that year. They played a game against Wake Forest that year. He was the quarterback for Wake Forest. They played a game against, Army that year. And Wake Forest won that game 70-56. That was the final score. His Wake team was terrible defensively. In that game, he threw for 458 and 5 touchdowns. He had a game that year where he played against Sam Howell and North Carolina in a shootout. 58-55 was the final score. Hartman threw for 398, 5 touchdowns, ran for 78 yards and 2 touchdowns, right? He accounted for nearly 500 yards of offense. That's not Jaden Daniels territory, but it's up there. And 7 touchdowns in that game. I looked this up. Sam Howell, he played on a team that had terrible defense in 2021. And by the way, Drake May didn't have a much better defense when he was at Carolina, but it was a little bit better last year anyway. But Sam Howell in that game, 216 yards and a touchdown, but he rushed for 104 yards and 2 touchdowns. I watched a lot of the Notre Dame games this year. Tim Murray would be one of those guys that would really be able to give you sort of expertise on Sam Hartman at Notre Dame. I do remember he was not very good in that classic Saturday night game in September that they lost on the walk-off touchdown by Ohio State. 17-14 was the final score. He struggled in that game. They could not generate any offense against Ohio State. He also struggled big time against Clemson later in the year. He had a couple of very good games, though, at Notre Dame. In that game, head up against Caleb Williams, they didn't have to do much because SC could not stop the run. But he threw for 2 touchdowns in that 48-20 rout of SC. That was the night Caleb Williams was really off, threw a bunch of picks in South Bend. But I think Sam Hartman is a guy that can be a really good ball handling, dual threat, smart, get it out quickly, I think. I don't know. I'm thinking about just watching him at Notre Dame this year. I'm looking up the sack totals. There were a couple games where it just seemed like he just constantly held on to it too long. He was only sacked 14 times. Yeah, I'm wrong on that. He was sacked 5 times against Louisville. I remember that game. He struggled mightily that night against Louisville. Took 4 sacks against a pretty good defensive team in NC State. That was the game early in the year that literally got stopped because of thunderstorms, and when they resumed, there was like nobody in the crowd in Raleigh, and Notre Dame just rolled it up on them with no crowd there. He actually had 4 touchdown passes in that game. He was 24 TDs, 8 interceptions at Notre Dame. It's funny, though. I just remember that Wake offense was just unstoppable. But it also goes to show you, like, the schedule Wake played compared to Notre Dame's, the ACC portion the same. You had some good defenses in the ACC, but you had some bad defenses. That 2021 season where they actually went to the ACC title game, 58-55, 70-56, 40-37, 45-42. I mean, every Wake game was that way. But, man, they were a great offensive football team. Just with a lot of the, you know, read option, slow mesh read option as part of the attack, a lot of RPO. I think he's going to be the third quarterback. I mean, they gave him that money because they see him as QB3. And by the way, if they see him as QB3 now, they probably see him as QB2 starting in 2025, or he's got a chance to be QB2 in 2025. If you have a moment and you haven't rated or reviewed the show and you want to take 30 to 60 seconds to do so, it would be much appreciated. Apple and Spotify allow you to give us up to 5 stars if you think we deserve it. Apple gives you a chance to write a quick 1 to 2 sentence review. It's really helpful for us. Advertisers look for audience size, which is something we do very well with, but they also look for how much the audience likes the show, and the ratings and reviews really reflect that. So if you haven't done it, you have a chance to do it. I thank you for that. Subscribing to the podcast is a big help, and following us on Apple and Spotify, just hit the plus button if it's still there, if you haven't followed us on the home screen of our podcast on Apple and Spotify, and that would be much appreciated as well. All right, let's talk some football and bring on Warren Sharp as promised. Warren, a longtime football analyst. You can follow him on Twitter, on X at Sharp Football. We'll talk some draft here. We will talk maybe at the end of the conversation about some of the work you've done already in looking ahead to the 2024 NFL schedule strength. The way you do it, I think, makes the most sense. But I want to start with the draft, something that I think, you know, all of us love. We debate it, we discuss it, and after the fact, a lot of people want to declare something about it. And the truth is, we all know as football fans that the people that get paid to do this with teams get patted on the back 3 years down the road if they hit on 35 to 40% of the picks in a specific draft. But I know you do a lot of work in analyzing drafts, and I want to start with that. Is there a fair way to evaluate a draft in the moment, right after it's happened?
Well, it's a tricky question, obviously, because everybody has their own opinions, and most people believe that their opinions are correct. And so it makes it a challenge because you have the school of thought that, you know, I'm talking from a media perspective, not from a team perspective, but from a public facing perspective, let's say. Many people believe that it's difficult to grade a draft, to rank a draft, because you really have to wait and see how these players end up developing. There's a smaller school of thought that believes that you should be able to analyze the decisions that are made today with some level of clarity as to whether this was a good decision or a poor decision, and thus you should be able to analyze the NFL draft. One of the ways that I like to measure it is I like to go to some of the experts that are actually studying the tape, studying the film, have a better knowledge of these players than most of the people that are kind of publicly just talking about it. So that's like go to the experts, so to speak. And then the other way that I like to look at it is by a metric that is called draft capital over expectation, and basically employs a wisdom of crowds approach to studying the draft. And the logic behind this wisdom of crowds approach, and Arif Hassan, who writes for wideleft.com, I think it is, does a big board, consensus big board. And what that means is he's going through and analyzing over 100 different boards where they're ranking the top 250 athletes, players, prospects for this draft class. And, you know, obviously one or two of them could be way off than the others, but when you're going through 101 of these, you're going to come up with a general consensus as to this is where we feel prospects are slotted or ranked in terms of where they should be drafted. Now, you might reach for a need, you might reach for a variety of other things, but in general, these are where these players are drafted. And So that's heading into the draft. You can get an understanding as to where all of these players are being slotted. And then you see where they actually were taken, and you can measure the delta between the two to determine if a guy was potentially by a singular team drafted too early, or and thus making him maybe a reach, or he was drafted later than what the consensus was, and that might make him a steal. And generally speaking, we in the analytics community tend to believe that reaches are more of a thing than steals are. In other words, reaches are more accurate in terms of, okay, this was probably wrong. Whereas a steal, so think about a reach. A reach means, like, let's pretend a player was supposed to go at pick number 50 and a team drafts him at pick number 20. Well, that was technically well before he should have been drafted, based upon the general consensus. And that team who drafted him might be right, or they might be wrong. Nobody else had, no other team had the opportunity and decided to draft that player. So it's only on the one team that decided to. They're either right or they're wrong. Whereas if a player slides, let's pretend the opposite occurred, and he was supposed to go number 20, but he's not taken until number 50. Well, many, many teams had the opportunity to take this guy. He fell 5 spots, fell 10 spots, fell 15 spots, fell 20 spots, and none of the teams are taking him. All of these teams have decided they do not want to draft this player with their pick, and then one team ends up taking him. So all these guys passed on him. So it's more likely that a player that fell is accurate than a player that was a steal is accurate. But that's kind of the way that I like to approach it, is from the two-pronged approach. How does it compare to the consensus? And then target some select guys that I believe are well qualified to give me feedback, and I listen to them.
Yeah, and I referenced your DCOE yesterday, and what you're talking about here is a way to evaluate in the moment how a team did relative to kind of a consensus big board. I am curious, we're a long, long ways away from the days in which Kuiper would scream, that's a reach based on my board, or that's a steal based on my board. This would have been much more difficult to do years ago because we didn't have this cottage industry. It's not even a cottage industry anymore, but we didn't have all of these mock drafts out there. I did want to ask you, in terms of like the consensus big board, you talked about this guy. I think his name's Arif. I think I've had him on the show before. Like, where is this big board specifically coming from? Like, which mock drafters? It's not coming from a consensus from teams, obviously. They're not going to disclose that information.
No, that's correct. So what he does is he goes through 101 boards. And he actually ranks them out, whether they were, pull the actual, information here. He calls them, evaluators and then forecasters. The forecasters are a group of draft analysts. This is per his website at wideleft.football. The forecasters are a group of draft analysts with access to some team information and sourced data on prospects. The evaluators are analysts that primarily rely on publicly available data, such as combine results and tape. So, when I look at, we can bet on the draft now. So when I'm looking at trying to grade out different mock drafts, to find out which ones are going to be the most accurate. And there's a difference between a big board, which doesn't really slot the players to the team. They're just ranking the prospects, and they go well beyond the first round. They're, up to 300. Whereas a mock draft that I'm looking at when I'm trying to pick which over under this specific player, J.J. McCarthy under 5.5 draft slot, I'm going to be focusing more on mock drafts to do that. So he's got the forecasters that have access to information, some team information and some source data. And then he's got the evaluators that are looking at the publicly available data. You can go and track the most accurate big boards. Some websites do keep track of that. You can go track the most accurate mock drafts, and some websites keep track of that. And so you can target the individuals. You can see their names and how accurate their scores are. I'm not sure if Hassan went through and tried to do that as he's pulling these 101 consensus big boards or these big boards to determine his consensus or not. I'm not sure where he's sourcing that specifically, but I do know he categorizes them into different groups. And I'll tell you this, Kevin, I did go and look at what my results would have been for the DCOE. If I just looked at what I'm guessing is probably closer to team evaluators, and that's the group he calls the forecasters, which has access to certain team information. And the difference doesn't really change all that much. In addition, I looked at, you know, me personally, I wanted to see. It's not so bad if you're reaching on a guy in the sixth round, right? Like, because there's a better chance for a lesser known prospect or a lesser talented prospect potentially that you personally might have a different opinion on right. this player than some of the rest of the NFL. And so I don't really care as much as that. So I looked at, you know, what about just the first three rounds? How does DCOE look for the first three rounds? And there are some teams that moved up a little bit, but for the most part, many of the teams stayed pretty similar based on DCOE.
As it relates to DCOE, draft capital over expectation, your way of analyzing, you know, a draft class, and we'll get to the Commander stuff here where they ranked in a few minutes. But you wrote something that I thought was interesting, and you essentially implied that on occasion it's okay to reach. Like if you have a unique offensive system and there's a certain player that fits that system, that it's okay to actually reach and maybe take a player spots ahead of where they are projected to go. Maybe I just explained it, but I'll just ask you to add to it.
In order to make sure they get these players, they do have to draft them before the average, because by the time you get to the average consensus, it's fair game for everybody, and you might not be picking there. So you have to take them where your pick is. And so it does make sense. I guess it's defensible slash arguable that you may need to reach on certain players if you're trying to deploy a new system, guys that'll fit your system a little bit better. You may need to reach on those.
Warren Sharp joining us right now, and I think most of you understand how Warren evaluates a draft. Warren essentially evaluates the draft based on where these players are taken by teams and where these players were supposed to be drafted. If you draft a player after the player was supposed to be drafted, that's a valuable pick. If you draft a player before that player was supposed to be drafted, that's a reach. And again, we'll get to how the Commanders did here in a moment. But what's interesting to me is how does that play out 3 years down the road when you actually can evaluate a draft class and find out whether or not the players turned out to be good players and contributors or not?
That's an outstanding question. I honestly have not been looking at the consensus big board long enough to be able to judge that. Because I started looking at this just a few years ago myself. And so it's a valid question. The interesting part about the draft is that so many of these coaches and GMs that end up making the picks or are doing the evaluation to make the picks aren't there 3-4 years, you know, from the time that they're making them. But you're right. Eventually, we should be able to go back and look at the players and judge them based upon the big board. I did see a tweet by Austin Gale a couple of days ago where he listed out, here were the biggest reaches by draft class based on Hassan's big board. And he went through the last maybe 4 or 5 years. And as you're looking down that list, he only listed like the top two or three. Pretty much all the guys that were reaches ended up bombing in the NFL. They were not good players in the NFL, which is why a reach is almost always a reach, whereas a steal is rarely a steal. Exceptions to every rule, and those were the biggest of the biggest. Washington doesn't have any of the biggest from their draft class.
All right, so as it relates to the 2024 NFL draft class, where did Washington come in terms of, you know, for the lack of a better description, how sharp they were drafting players where they were supposed to be drafted?
Well, the good news for Washington, the easiest eval is Jaden Daniels, right? He was expected to number two. He went number two. He wasn't over or under drafted. He was drafted exactly where he was expected to go. The other good news, obviously, had those 3 second-round picks, and two of those 3 second-round picks were steals, were highly valuable players, were players that they drafted later than what the board was expecting them to be drafted. So if you look at Newton, your defensive tackle, he was expected to be drafted at pick number 26. He went at pick number 36. Now, in each of these categories, as you get higher up to the number one pick, that draft capital is more valuable.
Sure.
And so even though a guy was off by only 10 spots here, that draft capital, those 10 spots, is far more valuable than, let's say, the difference between the 100th and the 110th pick. But he was the best value that you guys had of the entire draft class. Sandstrill, the cornerback out of Michigan, he was expected to go pick number 45 until pick 50. That also was a little bit of a value for you guys. On the below value side, I listed out already on the offensive side of the ball, your tight end, Luke McCaffrey, and Coleman, your tackle. Those were three of your four worst picks based upon draft capital over expectation. The numbers, just to spit them off here, Sinnott was supposed to go at 83, and you guys picked him at 53 overall. McCaffrey was supposed to go at 146. You guys picked him at 100 overall. And Coleman was supposed to go at pick 114, and you guys took him at pick 67. Now, again, supposed to go, that's just based upon the average consensus. Does not mean that there's some sort of precise indicator. It's just that the average consensus. But those guys were all overdrafted. And then the other guy that sort of stands out that falls in the middle of them is your linebacker in the fifth round, McGee. He was supposed to go 174, and you took him at 136. So when you look at the overall ranking, I'm sure you shared this with the listeners already, but you guys finished, 25th? But the good news, in my opinion, is that if you look at your top picks, your most valuable picks, you're getting three of the four at or better value than what was expected. And so by those standards, if those guys are going to be the most impactful guys because they were drafted highest and will get the most playing time, then you guys got better value for those picks. So that's a real positive. Whereas, guys in the fifth round or so, taking those guys earlier than expected may just be the fact that you're trying to fit in a new offense and install something, and you're going after, quote unquote, your guys, as opposed to who's the best player at this spot who gives us the best value based upon where everybody else thought he should be drafted.
Washington finished 25th. I had not shared it with my audience yet. I had referenced the way you kind of evaluated draft. Washington 25th out of 32 teams in Warren Sharp's draft capital over expectation evaluation of the draft in the moment. The best was Detroit. The worst, and I think I could have guessed this because of Penix Jr., even though I was a big fan of Penix Jr., and I thought there was a chance that he would get picked in the top half of the first round, but Penix Jr. going eighth made Atlanta's draft the worst based on this criteria, and I'm assuming that it was Penix that drove that, right?
Actually, the interesting element here was it was not Penix that drove it. Penix was expected to go based upon the way that the final mocks were falling out. He was still expected to go right around pick number 23.
Okay.
And so going at eight was a definite reach for sure. But the sad part about the Falcons, and who knows, maybe they'll be right and we're wrong. That's the interesting part about this, why right. I like using it, the wisdom of crowds approach, is that, the odds, though, that the Atlanta Falcons were right on all of these guys, and all 31 teams plus the consensus big board were wrong, are very slim. Right? You have to be very lucky if you're the Atlanta Falcons to be right on all of these picks. And so they had actually, Kevin, 5 picks that had worse draft capital over expectation than the Penix pick. 5 of them that were worse.
Well,
their defensive tackle they took in the second round, Aurora Ho, he was worse. Then they've got a bunch of fifth and sixth round guys, Jace McClellan, all the guys that they drafted after the fourth round were substantial reaches to a degree that was worse than the score for Penix Jr.
Well, the D-tackle they took from Clemson was the pick before Washington got great value with their pick of Newton at the same position.
Exactly.
One pick later.
Yes.
Before I let you run, one of the things that I've enjoyed over the years is how you look ahead to the schedule. We know the opponents. We don't know the actual schedule. We'll know that in a couple of weeks. And you develop, based on projected win totals, strength of schedule the right way, which, looking back at last year, is the wrong way because the league changes so much year to year. So using the over-under numbers, I think you did this recently, if you can remember, where was Washington's strength of schedule among 32 teams?
Yeah, so you guys have the 13th easiest schedule in the NFL out of those 32 teams. That's the positive. So you're on the positive side of having an easier than average schedule. The negative is that you had the 12th easiest schedule last year, and of course you only won four games.
Yeah.
We know what happened at the end of the year ultimately allowed you to get Jaden Daniels in the past and history, and so let's look forward to the future. But that's currently where you guys rank, and I guess the other positive is if you're looking at teams like the Giants, who you'll be competing with, or the Cowboys, who you'll be competing with, you have an easier schedule than both of those teams. Ironically, the Philadelphia Eagles have a slightly easier schedule than you do, so they have the easiest of any of the teams in the NFC East. But your schedule is easier by my metrics than the Giants, than the Cowboys, and you rank 13th overall.
Always fun to catch up. Thanks for making time for me today, Warren. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Warren Sharp, everybody. All right, let's switch gears. Michael Lee, longtime reporter for the Washington Post. We'll talk some basketball. I will also ask Michael about Caleb Williams and the quarterbacks in the draft, because he did a very impressive profile of Caleb Williams back in the early portion of football season. We'll get to that and a lot more right after these words from a few of our sponsors. All right, guys, now with the NFL draft behind us, it's time to focus on springtime games, like real games, playoff games. For me, it's the NBA playoffs. And if you're a daily fantasy sports player, I've got the app for you. Prize Picks is the app that's easy and exciting and a new way to play DFS. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. It's just you against the numbers, not you battling thousands of other players. It's you picking more than or less than on between 2 and 6 player stat projections with odds. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 during these NBA playoffs. Turn your NBA hoops knowledge into serious cash. Prize Picks, by the way, so simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use my code SHEEN for a first deposit match of up to $100. Again, download the Prize Picks app today. Use my code SHEEN, SHEEHAN, for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hey guys, I want to tell you about Harry's. Many of you have probably heard of Harry's razors and shaving products, maybe even from this podcast. They've been an occasional advertiser over the years. I'm a customer. I have been for a while now. I think it goes back to the first shipment of product that they sent me before the first time they advertised on the pod, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They found a way, Harry's did, to make a beautifully designed razor for a fraction of the price of other big brands. I've been using their Truman handle. It's a 2-tone handle with a great grip. It provides a close shave, no matter if you've got a beard, beard and you're shaving around it, or if you cleanly shave on a daily basis. Their German-engineered blades stay sharp and stay sharp for a long period of time. They've got customizable delivery options for scheduled refills for as low as $2. That's half of what you pay other big brands. Right now, you can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, and this is a no-risk trial. If you don't like your shave, no worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options exist that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. That's harrys.com/SHEEHAN for a $3 trial set.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Major gut check here for the Philadelphia 76ers. McBride. And that's it. The Sixers stay alive. The Knicks could not shut the door.
Spectacular playoff game last night at Madison Square Garden. Yes, we're going to do some basketball talk right now. Michael Lee will join me in a moment. This upcoming segment is sponsored by Window Nation. Window Nation's got their semi-annual sale going on right now, and it's a big deal. Right now, you get 50% off all windows, along with no interest for 5 years. Plus, you get bonus savings when you schedule an appointment today. That appointment is no risk. It doesn't cost you a thing. It's a free, no obligation, no hassle quote. If you've got older windows, if you want your house to look better, you want to save on your utility bills, give Window Nation the first shot. I promise you it will work out. They've got a great product. They've got great people. And the deal right now is too good to pass on. 50% off all windows, no interest for 5 years. Plus, if you schedule that appointment today and you mention my name, you'll get further savings. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com and be sure to mention my name. All right, Michael Lee, longtime Washington Post reporter, has covered the NBA. He's covered a lot of different things for the Post. You can follow Michael on X, on Twitter, at Mr. Michael Lee. I always enjoy basketball conversations with Michael, and I thought of you today after the game last night because we had back-to-back great games. But let's start with what happened in the Garden last night. Philadelphia coming from behind, winning in overtime, staying alive, down 3-2 in a great series. Do you think the Sixers can pull off a 3-1 comeback and come back and win this series, something that Joel Embiid predicted when they went down 2-0?
I don't know if they'll have enough gas. I worry about Joel Embiid's stamina and his ability to play with one day rest after playing 48 minutes. It'll be tough to see him come back. Maybe being home will give him the juice to step up and have a typical Embiid type performance. But he was really fading in the fourth quarter of that game. I mean, he was throwing the ball all over the place. He wasn't really engaged. And Tyrese Maxey did everything in his power to save him. Like, he saved. He didn't just save the Sixers season. He saved Joel Embiid, because that would have been like, oh, this guy can't deliver in closeout games. Oh, look at him. He's got a shooting percentage. He shot so poorly, and he had all these turnovers. But Tyrese saved the day with just one of the most incredible performances that anybody that young has ever had. I mean, to come to be 23 years old, to still be on your rookie deal, and to have that kind of performance in the Garden, in Madison Square, like, and completely upset all the stars and celebrities and all those Knicks fans and just crushed their spirits. It was phenomenal. And the thing that I loved about it the most is that it really showed how tough mentally Tyrese is, because the last time he was in that building in game two, he got fouled and lost the ball. They didn't call the foul,
right,
but he did lose the ball. And then they gave up that three on another incredible shot by Dante DiVincenzo. And so you had this epic game two. And he goes around and flips it on the Knicks and gives them his Reggie Miller performance as they choke away a game. So it was just it's been an entertaining series. I don't know if Philly has enough to match up with the Knicks, but them at home. I mean, once you give a team life, that's the thing with the playoffs. You give a team life, you put yourself at risk, and you don't really want to play with your food in the playoffs because it comes out to bite you typically.
Yeah, I mean, the ending of that game, him scoring 7 points in the last 28 seconds, it wasn't exactly Reggie Miller, but it was Reggie Miller-esque. But in talking about Embiid, and I mentioned this in the open to the podcast today, I mean, Joel Embiid has a knee injury. He has Bell's palsy, which he's been diagnosed with. And he had a severe migraine yesterday. And he was out there for 48 minutes. Like, the one thing that I really appreciated last night was him being out there and competing for 48 minutes, whereas the night before, Anthony Davis was basically breathed on and the Lakers were playing 4-on-5 the rest of the way.
Well, yeah, but Anthony Davis has had a little more success in the playoffs than Embiid.
Yeah.
He does have a ring.
I know.
I will give him a pass. And they also are playing a much better opponent than anybody that Embiid has really faced in the playoffs.
But you get my point on Anthony Davis and
do,
on Embiid. Anthony Davis, what happened the other night was typically Anthony Davis.
I feel like Anthony Davis gets a bad rap. Honestly, I think he's the reason why the Lakers went to the Western Conference Finals last year. I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he was phenomenal this year, playing 76 games, which no one talked about. And, you know, getting a shot in the elbow, I mean, in the shoulder the way he did, I don't know. That's like, that would have hurt. I mean, I don't know if and he stayed out on the court. Not like he left the court and went to the back to cry. Like, he out there, he competed the best he could until his shoulder, you know, healed. And he was still getting rebounds and he was still contesting shots. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like AD gets a bad rap. I think that that he does a lot more for the Lakers than score. And you know, he didn't have the best series, but he also wasn't on the best team. As for Embiid, he's just been hit with the bad luck stick. Every postseason, something happens. Every single postseason, from the minute he reached the playoffs. I remember the first year he had a facial fracture, and he came out and couldn't play like the first couple games, and he came in a home game wearing like a Phantom of the Opera mask,
exactly,
you know, to ring the bell to get everybody fired up.
Yeah.
And so he's always, every postseason there's something that happens. Last year it was a knee injury that he's coming back from that slowed him down. And so it's like every year, like, you just wonder how in the world can he play a full season and then all of a sudden get to April and then all of a sudden every bad thing can happen, the plague. I mean, when they had their best shot at winning the championship was 2019 against Toronto, you know, he had like a stomach virus that made him, you know, that just crept up on him at the wrong time. Like, there's always something with him. And so I think that's why, like, Sixers fans are really excited now because of what Tyrese Maxey did, because they realize that they can win in spite of Embiid having a bad game. But the one thing about Embiid is he has to be on the floor. Like, he has to be on the floor. Their plus-minus numbers when he's on the floor are, like, off the charts.
Yep.
Like, when he's on the floor, they are a great team no matter what. Even if he's just lumbering all over the place and not being efficient, just his presence just makes them, a legitimate threat. And so, but Tyrese Maxey just stepped up as a true superstar, did, and just told him, I got you, just to let him know that, you might not be the best. And that's all the Sixers have needed for the whole time they've had Embiid in the postseason, for somebody to just tell Joel Embiid, hey, I got you, and hope that maybe one day he'll return that favor. Maybe it'll be game six, but we'll see.
Look, on Anthony Davis, we'll just agree to disagree. I agree with you because he's a great player. I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the best to ever do it, and I've enjoyed watching him play when he's been healthy, and there have been moments over the years I'm like, I just wish he were available more. But there have been too many moments where he's wincing and grimacing and rolling around. I mean, I thought if it weren't him, I would have thought somebody had been seriously injured the other night. But once it was him, given what we've watched from over the years, I just knew, oh, God, they're in trouble. And I actually just wanted to see that series extended. The Knicks 76ers game was great, and we'll see what happens in Game 6. I just thought Embiid was a true warrior last night, given everything that he's dealing with to be out there for 48 minutes. You wrote a story, and it's actually kind of a perfect segue, talking about the Lakers. We didn't talk about LeBron specifically. And then Tyrese Maxey last night. You wrote a story a couple of months ago, Long Live the NBA's Three Kings, the league's brightest stars for more than a decade, James, Durant, and Steph Curry shine on. And in that moment, that was happening. All three of them are out. This is the first postseason, I think, since 2005. That would have been the year, right, that LeBron went and lost to the Pistons after he had that phenomenal Game 6 in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that was the year. It's the first time we've gotten to the second round without one of the three. My question to you is...
Not since they entered the league. I think we should preface that. Ever since Steph's been in the league in 2009-10 season, at least one of them has been beyond the second round.
Yeah. Right.
Or made it to the second round.
Yeah, so if you start it in 2009 when all three of them are in the league, first time that we haven't seen at least one of them in the second round. So my question to you would be, did we see one of the next three or four or five big stars have his first massive moment last night in Maxey?
Maybe. I mean, I think we got to just see how it all plays out beyond the first round. I think the reason why we appreciate LeBron, Steph, and KD is that over the last, 15 years or so, is that they have been relevant because they've been on that championship stage. They've won rings. They've had great performances in meaningful games and memorable games that stay with us. The first round, for as entertaining as it can be, is just the first round. And unless you can do it in the conference finals or the NBA finals, that's when you establish a reputation. But I think there have been stars who've been emerging throughout this postseason, and it's been something I've been begging for a long time. I've been waiting for the young guys, for this new generation to say, it's our league. They've allowed LeBron and Steph to kind of hang on a lot longer than they probably should have, but it says a lot about the passion and the love they have for the game. They're still relevant. But I think that it's time for guys like Anthony Edwards to say, hey, man, It's my time now. Like, I'm taking it, and I'm talking smack to your face, and I'm dunking on you, and I'm snatching chains, and I'm doing everything else because it's my turn. It's a guy like Tyrese Halliburton, doing his thing in Indiana. It's a guy like I said, Tyrese Maxey in Philly. Jalen Brunson with the Knicks. All these young guys that are sort of their moment. Of course, it's their turn. I mean. Jokic is, he's 29. He's in that middle age of the NBA stars, but it's time for these young guys to really start taking a hold because, if they don't take hold, when will they? And it, so this is the moment. And so I'm just pleased to see that, you know, as much as I'm disappointed that, like, Durant's no longer there, Steph's not, didn't even make it to the playoffs, and LeBron's gone, but, it, you know, I think it's just time. I think it's good for the league to always turn the page to something fresh and something new and something to get excited about, because we don't want to keep telling the same story over and over again. We want to get new blood in here and sort of get something to get excited about. And I love what I'm seeing right now. You know, I wish that we could just get Zion and Ja to be healthy so that they could be a part of this too, because those are two names we keep waiting on, but they're always either hurt in the playoffs, or this year Ja just wasn't even around. But I just want to see the new guys kind of take over the league and just give it a new energy, because, you know, it's a young man's game, and it should play out that way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I love Anthony Edwards. I love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, there are so many of these young players, but this league's always, at this time of year, the experience has won out. It's one of the reasons I'm looking so forward to seeing Minnesota and Denver in this next series. And actually, I mean, I wish the Clippers were healthy, because I would have loved to have seen Oklahoma City play a healthy Clippers team. I don't know how that series will play out with Game 5 tonight. But I wonder what you think of the idea or the thought that LeBron James just isn't done yet. And I say that because, and I talked about this yesterday after they went out in Game 5, and I just thought that LeBron James was playing at a level. He's a better shooter than I think he's ever been in his career. He was, you know, he shot better from behind the arc.
Career high from three.
Yeah, yep. than he's ever shot it before. Just the stroke in general is more consistent. He looks to me bigger, stronger, and at least as athletic as he's ever been. Maybe not Durant, maybe not Steph. I don't know about those two. But what could the Lakers do for LeBron and AD in terms of an addition to make them a legitimate deep into, you know, May and June team next year? Because it doesn't seem like they're that far off.
I think they're further off than you think.
Okay.
And mainly because they're still relying on a 39-year-old guy to carry them and to be the primary force. That can't be the case if they're going to win a championship, you know. And I don't know how necessarily LeBron can defer more, but either AD has to be the guy, or they have to get a younger guy who can carry them. I say this all the time, and whenever anybody brings it up, like, why are these old guys losing? Because Father Time is undefeated, right? But he can give you a pass or help you extend it if you have a young guy on your roster who can, you know, boost your championship aspirations. You know, if you look at Oscar Robertson, you know, he won when he got with Kareem, right? Kareem, you know,
Magic
languished for years with the Lakers.
Yep.
Then he got Magic. Then you had Shaq. You know, he got D-Wade. That helped extend his career. You had Tim Duncan. He got Kawhi Leonard. That helped extend his career. He was able to, you know, win a championship late in his career. LeBron was able to win a championship, his last one with AD, when AD stepped up and was a star. And I know it doesn't get said a lot, but Steph, when he won his last ring, that was Andrew Wiggins' best performance as a professional basketball player. He played as a true elite, all-star caliber player during that finals run. So you can just go down in history. You always find it, but unless they can find a young guy who is really able to elevate their ceiling and their floor, they're going to continue to be a team that no one can really take seriously, because the West is only going to get better. They're going to get older. These other teams are going to get better because they're younger and they're still approaching their prime if they're not already in it. And so that's what the Lakers, if they can do anything, they'd have to get a young star. I don't know where they find it, how they find it, or who's willing to sacrifice a star, who can actually elevate their floor and their ceiling. Because if LeBron has to be the guy to carry them, he can't do it, because he's 39 years old. And that's unfair to ask of him. And, like, you could look at last year's run and say, well, they made the Western Conference Finals just a year ago, so why can't they just do it again? That was a fluky run. Let's just be honest. That run was not legit. I mean, in terms of like them being a true contender.
Those games against Denver in the Western Conference Finals, I know they got swept, but every single game was competitive.
They weren't good enough, though.
No, they weren't.
It doesn't really
matter. That's true. That's what I'm asking, though, because it wasn't LeBron.
But I'm saying, but it's fool's gold. If you look at that and say, oh, well, they were this close. No, they weren't. They lost. They weren't this close. They lost. And they went ahead and just brought back those same pieces. And those same pieces, they were a playing team.
What I'm suggesting, though, is
a healthy AD and a healthy LeBron.
Yeah, I agree.
The whole season,
I agree with
70
you.
Games, and they were a seventh seed.
I agree with you that they can't win it without adding something else. And that's what I'm asking you: is there somebody out there that they could add?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know who that player is. I mean, a lot of people say like a Trae Young or whatever. Maybe you should get him, but I don't know if he really elevates their floor that much because he can't defend. You know, they need somebody who can.
Yeah.
Who can play both ends of the floor. And they need somebody who can help defend. They probably need a three who can play the four and kind of take the pressure off LeBron defensively, because as much as he's a great player at this age, this late stage in his career, he is a bit of a liability on the defensive end. And if you look at the games that they lost, he wasn't able to make the plays that you would expect him to make down the stretch because he is older, and we shouldn't expect him to do that. You know, if you look at just the whole series, I mean, there were moments when you thought, oh, LeBron's going to take over, and he had some great moments in the fourth, but he never closed it, you know? And so I think that's, it's not good for a franchise to say that, a guy this old is going to have to be the one to close the deal. You got to find somebody who can do that. And it's tough to ask a big man to do it unless it's somebody like a Jokic who can beat you
right.
in so many different ways. AD's a great scorer, you know, at times. But it's not like he's a great facilitator or playmaker or anything like that Jokic does, because that's what makes him so great, is that, you know, you can say, oh, we're going to double him and get the ball out of his hands. And he's like, great. That means I can find Michael Porter Jr. wide open, or I can get Jamal and just get him off and not, you know, I don't have to do anything. Or you're going to say, you're going to go one-on-one with me? Okay, I'll just bust whoever's in front of me. So it's just a unique player. But as for the Lakers, I just don't know what they can do. As long as they're going to continue to build with LeBron being, you know, their frontline guy, they're going to continue to have, you know, they're not going to be a championship contender. And it's not a knock on
is
LeBron.
Is there a place where LeBron can go and be a championship contender?
There are a couple places that he could go. I mean, he could go to New York. He can go to Philly. He can go to a couple places where there's enough of a strong force there that can elevate him, and he doesn't have to be the guy that has to deliver in those stretches. Like if he plays with an Embiid and a Maxey, oh man, and he's facilitating and making plays for them, yeah, that's a team that could do something. Or if he's, you know, out there with the Knicks and he's just, you know, kind of a versatile, you know, forward for them and doing, you know, some of the things that they like to do and playing for Tibbs, and they got the defensive pieces around him to cover for him. Then yeah, that could help him, but I don't know. I don't know if he wants to leave L.A. either, because
right.
you know, at the end of the press conference the other day, he said, you know, everything's about my family and my son. If he's going to play in the NBA, and he's got his kids are in school, you know, if he's really that big into his family and that's what matters to him, then why would he leave L.A.?
Is his son an NBA
put
player?
Put him in an apartment. Who, Bronny?
Yeah.
He is. If
no, I'm talking. If
LeBron
says
he is,
if LeBron weren't his father,
I don't know if he's ready, honestly. And it's not because I don't think he's any good. I just don't know. He came off a heart
right.
you know, ailment, you
right.
know, which is scary, you know, and like I don't think that can be overlooked, you know, for somebody that young to have that kind of a health scare. I think that, you know, it should be about him now just getting his footing back as a basketball player. And not necessarily rush him into the NBA, but I mean, it's his life and his decision. If his dad can leverage a position for him in the NBA, then so be it. I mean, he's got a decent enough jumper. He's skilled enough. I don't think he's a star, but I think he could play in the game, play in the league. But I also think that it'd be good for him if he went back to a school and was able to just have a fully healthy season. And didn't have to worry about just trying to recover and get confidence and
yeah.
health and everything.
He
like
averaged
that.
4.8 points per game for a bad Pac-12 team. But to your point, he had a real health scare, a real heart health scare.
A legit one that can really shake your confidence in what you can do.
Yeah.
And I think it happened to him like at a practice or just a pickup game. Like that's going to mess with you mentally and give you doubt about like what am I doing out here? And so, but I don't know. I mean, at one point they said it was a first round pick, and now they're saying it's a second round pick.
Right.
I think that it doesn't really matter where you go as long as you got a team that's willing to give you a chance and give you an opportunity. But I wish that he wasn't being rushed in or pushed into this NBA draft process
right.
because I don't think he's proven that. He is. I don't think he's shown that he is by what he did in college last year. But sometimes you're in bad systems. Sometimes you're on teams that have too much talent at your position. I mean, they had one of the top guards in the country, probably a lottery pick, as the starting backcourt player on that team.
Yep.
So tonight he's going to take minutes from him. So it was just a tough situation for him to be in. So I don't know if he's a pro or not, but.
Right.
I know that his dad's going to make sure he is.
Yeah. Two more on the NBA, and then I want to ask you about the quarterbacks in the draft. We're talking to Michael Lee. Can anybody in the East beat the Celtics? Can they win 4 out of 7 against Boston or not?
I thought that Milwaukee could be that team, but I don't know what's going on with Giannis and Dame. I don't know if they're going to be able to come back and be healthy enough to contribute. If neither one of them can come back and play, or if they can't do it, I don't see anybody in the East standing in the way of the Celtics. Even if they don't get Kristaps Porzingis to play at a high level, I think they can get through the East without him, because they have the depth, they have the talent, they have Jason Tatum, who we talked about, future face
right.
of the league,
he fits in.
All the young players. Yeah. We kind of take him for granted because he's been relevant on
right.
a good team. Yeah, in the last 8 years or 6 years, we're so used to seeing him on that stage and performing, but we just like
how old is he? He's got to be 27 right now.
Yeah,
so 27. And Jokic is 29. Look, there were a lot of names we didn't mention. We didn't mention Luka. There are others, but I'm kind of with you, I'd actually like to see the 76ers and healthy at that time, but that's the question. In Milwaukee, I'm not trusting that they're going to be healthy for a series against Milwaukee. So one more quick NBA. So I stupidly, in hindsight, back in January at one point, I took the Clippers to win the West at +800 when they were really starting to play well and Kawhi was playing at a near MVP level for that month and a half or whatever it was, 2 months. It doesn't look like they're going to have him, but I'm just curious. Do you think if they did have him at full health, which is always the big issue, we've talked about Anthony Davis and others that have been hurt. It was probably even money that he or Paul George was going to end up missing much of the postseason. But if they were fully healthy, would you give them a chance to win the West?
I would, but it's funny. he has played, two games in this series?
Yeah, could barely walk. Yeah.
And they're 0-2 in those games.
Right, but he could barely walk in either one of those games. Yeah,
I know. But they won the games that he didn't play.
Right.
But yeah, their championship hopes have always hinged on him and his health. The one time they had a healthy Kawhi was in the bubble, and he didn't want to be there. Neither did his teammates. And
right.
you could see it when they blew that series against the Nuggets, when that was their best shot to win a championship. And ever since then, it's just been another bad run of health for him and for Paul George. Has been upsetting because you remember what happened the last time you saw a fully healthy Kawhi play, in front of a crowd and what he did with Toronto.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to be that guy since then. It's 5 years. Like, time flies. It's been 5 years. And, no one is left from that championship team in Toronto anymore. The coach is gone.
Right.
All the starters are gone. And so it's just like, man, a lot has changed. But what hasn't changed is that we still can't rely on Kawhi, to be healthy at this time of year.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but it's also kind of falls in line with the history of the Clippers. It's like this is their best chance to really be contenders, and they can't get their guys on the court. So But it's interesting that they've found a way, and that Harden has actually been really good this postseason. He's been their most consistent player, and he doesn't have to defer to Kawhi. I think some of the problems that they had, you know, late in the year, is that James still doesn't really know if he should be Houston Harden or some other whatever version he is now, facilitator Harden, and he doesn't know how to balance that whenever Kawhi is out there. But whenever Kawhi is gone, you can sort of see a more assertive James Harden, and that's what they need at all times. And I don't know how, I don't know why mentally he can't do it, because he couldn't do it with the Sixers either. He couldn't be committed to being an aggressive force, you know, consistent force for them, because you were so busy just saying, oh, well, I got to pass to Joel. And, you know, it just led to him being unhappy and for the Sixers to underachieve.
Yeah. He had an incredible performance in game four. I mean, the back and forth between him and Kyrie down the stretch was incredible. And I'm not a big James Harden guy. I don't like watching a lot of ISO or two-man basketball, even though a lot of the league does it. I mean, you know, well-coached teams, like the two teams last night, you know, there was a lot of Brunson with four guys standing around in overtime. But Harden was incredible the other night. And you're right, in watching them during the regular season, you could tell they were still trying to figure it out. But I think when the game slows down, if he were healthy, it should go through Kawhi, but it doesn't matter. He's not going to play, and they're probably going to lose this series. I'm guessing they're going to. By the way, I said one more question. Kyrie Irving, without getting into the personal stuff and the sabotaging of situations he's been in, I mean, you're a historian, and you love looking back on, you know, players in the past. I think in terms of scoring skill, the combination of ball handling and scoring ability, I don't know that a lot of people understand he's one of the greatest that's ever lived. And it's been on display in this postseason, where he also has always, when he's been engaged, when he's actually cared, he is the alpha in these big moments in the postseason. I thought he was incredible the other day, and has been throughout this series.
He has been, and I think Luka needs him because he's got a knee injury and he's not playing at full strength. And so somebody has to step up, and it is Kyrie. You know, I am not the biggest Kyrie fan. And a lot of it is rooted in the things you just mentioned. Like, I can't brush over the sabotage.
I can't either.
Brush over some of the things that he's done. And so I don't know why. I have like dark hater glasses when it comes to Kyrie.
I'm with you. I'm separating the artist from the art.
I can't, because I have my hater shades on whenever I see him perform. Like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, MJ only needed two dribbles. He didn't need 15. You know. I'm like that. Like, yeah. I don't really care about, you know, doing all the fancy dribbling and all the fancy, you know theatrics and the you know, circus shots off the backboard and everything. I think it's cool, but I also think, you know, a little simplicity is something I admire too. You know,
he's great, Michael. I can't stand him either. I can't stand him either, and I would never want to employ him. But when he's been in these situations where he's actually given a shit, he is a special all-time player.
He is. I mean, he's got the championship to show it, but. You know, I'm still looking at, like, what happened in Boston.
Okay.
What happened in Brooklyn.
I know. I'm like, James Harden ran away from him. That's all you need to know. all right. Tell me about the quarterbacks. Go ahead.
You know, I'm a big fan of KD, and I hate that that he wasted his last couple of really prime years playing with that guy. So
I know.
It's tough for me to appreciate.
No, I mean, I think the whole situation in Brooklyn was really Kyrie for the most part. By the way, speaking of KD, I think you're a fan of KD. I'm a fan of him as a player.
Absolutely.
Too. And I think one of the things that people don't realize is that the two titles that he won in Golden State, he was the best player on that team. And, you know, I don't
Without
know
a doubt.
That
no one even questioned it when he was there.
Well, I understand that, but I think when people look at what's happened since with him venturing out, mm-hmm. trying to win one without Steph and without Clay and without Draymond and without Steve Kerr and the whole thing, you know, there was the toe that was just barely on the three-point line in the series against Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could have gone differently, but it didn't. But to get swept out of the first round when mm-hmm. Devin Booker and they brought Bradley out there, it's not a good it's not a good look for him.
But how good was Bradley? He was it's the worst you've ever seen him play in the postseason. He was bad.
He was so bad in the final game. I talked about it. Literally, he could not. It was almost like he was colorblind in terms of throwing it or dribbling it to the other team. The turnovers, which by the way, has always been a bit of an issue with him.
I felt bad for him. I was like, man, he should not be out there on the floor. Like,
yeah.
Whatever he's dealing with, he's not healthy and he's not right. But yep. Get back to KD, and I'm glad you bring it up. I don't know how much time you got, but I can go on and on about it.
Well, let's try to keep it short because I want to get to some football.
I will say this. He is 5 years removed from an injury that should derail anybody's career. Nobody in the history of the game has come back from a ruptured Achilles the way he has. He is a prolific scorer. He's one of the greatest player scorers we've ever seen. Probably some people would say he is the greatest scorer we've ever seen just because of how simple he makes it all look, right? And he averaged 27, 6, and 6 and had an all-star season at age 35. At age 35, most players are gone from the league. They're no longer effective. They're no longer a championship contender. They're no longer leading championship contending teams. It happens. It happens to everybody at a certain age. Kobe Bryant never made the playoffs after age 32. KD is still performing at a high level 5 years removed from a ruptured Achilles. And I don't think that's mentioned enough. So everyone who says, oh, he got swept by Boston, he got swept by Minnesota. Oh, this is such a scar on his legacy. Hold up. You don't continue to build a legacy year 17. Your legacy's already set. If there's anything more you have to prove at this stage in your career, you haven't done it and you're not going to do it now. And when I mentioned earlier that you need to have a young stud that can really carry you, that's what you need if you're going to win it and be at a championship level. Devin Booker's a really nice player. He's a good player. He's an all-star caliber player. But he clearly isn't that kind of player that's going to elevate an older player to a champion. He wasn't able to do it with Chris Paul. He's not going to be able to do it with KD. And that roster, that team, was atrocious. That was one of the most poorly built teams in NBA history. They had no depth. They had no size. Think about this. They were
Counselor
a
Lee here.
Team.
Counselor
they
Lee.
Were an undersized.
Michael
they were
Lee, ESQ.
That had no
Look,
athleticism.
We're not in a
they
court of law. We're in a court of opinion. We're in a court of opinion.
I'm just telling you.
I understand. I understand.
They were
what
an undersized team with no athleticism.
But
do you know how you pull that off?
But there are people.
They were an undersized team with no athleticism. How are they going to compete with the Timberwolves?
But there are people. We're not in a court of law. We're in a court of public opinion, counselor. And what we have here is we have NBA fans, but really more so just casual NBA fans that think that Kevin Durant rode the back of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Steve Kerr, and the already crowned champions to his two titles.
You could say that, but I will say this. When the Warriors won their first title, I'm not hating on anybody. I'm not trying to discredit anybody.
Mm-hmm.
When the Warriors won their first title, LeBron James was by himself. Second best player was Matthew Dellavedova. They needed six games to beat LeBron by himself. LeBron by himself.
I think it's one of LeBron's best moments, actually. With Dellavedova and with Kyrie and Kevin Love out, he took that team to six games.
And that's who they beat. The next year they lost to that guy. The next 2 years they only needed 9 games to beat LeBron twice.
Yeah, I know.
They needed.
I'm with you.
Him,
he was the best player on those two championship
games.
Yes,
they played him 13 games those 2 years before KD, and they lost one of them.
Okay,
they played him 9 games the next two.
Yep.
It was not close.
Those details will get lost.
Yeah, they always do.
Yes.
No one cares about details. No one cares about context. No one cares about the fact that since he left Golden State, that he had to play with Kyrie, who imploded and sabotaged the team, that James Harden was playing on one leg. The Kyrie got hurt on the year. He stubbed his toe. The next year, they traded James Harden for a guy named Ben Simmons who did not play a single game for them. So they were a team that was built around three superstars. They had two. And then they played the Celtics team and went to the NBA Finals. So, of course, they're going to get swept. Last year in Phoenix, he was with the team for like 2 weeks. He hurt his ankle. He came back late in the year, never had a chance to establish any chemistry. They were the only team to win two games off the Nuggets in the playoffs,
right.
and they lost. And this year he got swept.
Right.
Okay, he's 35 years old.
The defense rests.
I could be here all day.
The defense can rest now. The defense can rest now.
Okay.
By the way, when you said the greatest scorer in the history of the game, he certainly is in the conversation. I'm with you on Kevin Durant as an absolute flat-out all-time great scorer. If we take
if Kev ever needs a defense attorney, I'm his guy.
Yeah. Let's take the centers out of the conversation. Would you put him ahead of Jordan? I would.
As a scorer?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You said you would or would not?
I would not either.
Jordan. Like I said, remember I talked about Kyrie and how Jordan did it with one or two dribbles?
Yeah.
Got right to his spot. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He was decisive and he was quick, and it was just.
Would you put him ahead of Kobe in the non-center conversation?
He has four scoring titles.
Yeah.
Name another guy that's not a center that has four scoring titles.
Well, Jordan, but how many did Gervin have?
I have to look it up. I mean, and that was a different era.
Did you see the documentary on him on NBA TV?
I have not seen the documentary on Gervin. I would love to watch it.
You have to watch it. It's so good.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of George Gervin. But I will say, I mean, Kevin was a four-time scoring champion. And then he decided that he was going to trade in, you know, putting up scoring numbers and be more efficient. And now he's been like a 50-40-90 guy, you know, maybe not each year, but his averages over that time has been that. So he's been efficient if he's not going to be a big-time scorer, you know. So he's going to put up respectable numbers but be more about efficiency. And, you know, I could talk about KD all day.
Gervin won four scoring titles.
He won four?
Yeah, I just looked it up. I'm just curious because I'm thinking about the greatest scorers that were always among, like, I actually thought briefly about Bernard King, but I'm looking at it right now. He only won one scoring title. Jordan won seven.
I mean,
Jordan won 10, excuse
me. Jordan won 10.
He
won 10, yeah. I mean, every year he played, he basically won a scoring title, especially with the Bulls. Every year he played with the Bulls, he won a scoring title.
Chamberlain won seven. Talking centers, Chamberlain won seven. Okay. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll continue and talk some football, including quarterbacks that were just drafted, with Michael Lee from the Washington Post, right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey, guys, most of us are interested in our mental and physical well-being to a certain degree, and with that in mind, I'd like to welcome and introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. The new sponsor is Unified Healing, Unified spelled UNIFYD, Healing. It doesn't matter if you're a big-time world-class athlete or just a somewhat athletic podcaster like me. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring the podcast now. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the DMV or anywhere else across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Well, go to unifiedhealing.com/Sheehan to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, spelled UNIFYD, healing.com/Sheehan. No material or testimonies on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC and you'll get a cash bonus on your initial deposit. Kentucky Derby on Saturday. This first weekend in May has got the Derby. It's got NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs. So for all of your sports and horsebook needs, go to MyBookie.ag and use my promo code KevinDC. We continue with Michael Lee from the Washington Post. Michael wrote a profile on Caleb Williams back in the early portion of the football season for the Washington Post. So what kind of quarterback do you think he'll be for the Bears?
You know, I don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be, but I can say one thing. Based on how he has constructed his life and his path, I would not doubt that he's going to be successful.
Why?
I spent time with him. I spoke to his dad. I spoke to his two of his mentors. I spoke to a lot of people. Everybody's around him. This kid is determined, and he told me, "I do not set small goals." His goals, his aspirations are to be. He wants to be the greatest, and he's going after it. I mean, how many 10-year-olds say, "I'm going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft"? And 10-year-olds say, "I'm going to be the number one pick," and then do everything that he could possibly do to be the number one pick, and then have it happen. Like, these are things that you dream about. These are goals that you, like, aspire to, and, you know, it's probably a shot in the dark. These are things that he feels like he can grab. And if you have that kind of determination and that kind of dedication, it's hard for me to doubt you. I mean, I don't doubt that he's going to be successful. I mean, it would have to be something that would derail him, an injury or something that I think that would knock him off. But this kid is focused. He's polished. He knows how to communicate with people. He knows how to work a room. He knows how to deal with his teammates. And he does it in a way that's genuine. And it's because of, like, how he was raised and who he was around. I remember, you know, I did a story on him last year, but I talked to him a little bit. And I noticed when I was around him at this event at Gonzaga, you were there.
Yeah.
It was, you know, with a fundraiser for his Caleb Cares program.
Right.
And I just saw how he worked the room. I saw how he went from, you know, place to place, you know, whether it was a little kid or a grown man or whoever, and he just put on the charm and everyone melted in his presence. And I was just amazed by how he was able to do this at 21, just like he could really work a room. And so I asked him, I was like, man, you know, is that natural for you? Like, or do you have to turn on the light switch? Like, how were you able to be so easily moved through these situations? He's like, well, he's been watching this. I've been watching my dad my whole life, and he's a businessman, and that's how he does. And I've been able to study him my whole life. And then, you know, so he's got that down. He knows how to work people and you know, engage with people and relate to people and help them sort of feel comfortable in his presence, right? But then his mother ran a daycare. So he's got his dad has got the business, and his mother ran a daycare. So he also knows how to care for people and look after people. And like he always, if you listen to all his interviews leading up to the draft, people ask him what he's about. He's like, I care. And you can tell that he understands that as a quarterback, his role isn't just to throw the ball to the receivers and, you know, and just make sure he makes plays. But he also has to make sure his linemen trust him and they are engaged and they feel like that he's going to play hard for them. And so he does a lot for his linemen. He flew all his linemen with him to the Heisman Trophy when he got the Heisman. He flew them all to New York. They had dinner. They all celebrated his moment and he also said, I couldn't do it without you. And like, this is not an act for him. This is how he really is. So long story short, I feel like he's going to be successful because he's committed and dedicated in a way that few guys are his age. He didn't just stumble upon being the number one pick and say, oh, shucks, look at where I am. He looked at it and said, I'm going to go get it. And he got it. And now that he's here, he's saying, I'm going to be the greatest to ever do it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I know that he's going to do everything in his power to try. And that's why I have confidence that he'll be successful.
He's going into a good situation. I mean, I don't know about organizationally, but in terms of the talent on the roster, what did you think from, you know, just a reporter standpoint and following the NFL draft, following the quarterbacks because of Caleb, what did you think about Washington taking Jaden Daniels?
Well, I mean, you know, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, and he did it against the SEC. I mean, it wasn't just that he was just a guy that stood in the pocket and just threw the great receivers. He was making plays. He was, you know, extending plays. He was running down the field. He was juking defenders. He was doing everything that you could do, and he did it at Arizona State as well. So, like, he's a guy that knows his talent, his ability. He's a great leader, and so I think it's a great pick. It's just the thing that scares me. And, you know, like I said, I'm confident that Caleb will be fine. The thing that scares me about anybody else or even him is that it's so rare that you hit on a first-round quarterback.
Yeah, I know.
So even if it looks great right now in the moment that you did this that you got this pick, you know, it's like one out of every four turns out to be any good. I mean, look at how Caleb landed in Chicago. The Carolina Panthers were so dedicated in thinking that Bryce Young is going to be their future. They gave up their future, and it landed in the Bears' laps.
Yep.
And now no one knows what Bryce Young is, or no one's confident that he's going to be a star after having one of the lousiest rookie years you could imagine. And now the Bears get a chance to build their future off of just a year ago a franchise that thought they were going to be, you know, moving ahead in a place that now no one is sure about. So it's such a crapshoot, but it really is, because it's so hard to measure humans, you know, and like how they're going to respond, what the environment's going to be like, what the culture's going to be like, how they handle pressure, how they handle the expectations, and just is the offense really geared for them? Is he going to mesh with the offensive coordinator? Are they going to come up with a system that really plays to his strengths? Are they going to try to make him, you know, fit into some sort of box, you know, and that's what's happened. Like, you see with like Patrick Mahomes, you know, just how great he is right now, but no one necessarily saw that when he went, you know, in the draft. Everyone thought that the Chiefs were fools for trading up to number 10 to take this gunslinger out of Texas Tech who showed no discipline and couldn't make, you know, basic plays and basic reads, and they're gonna invest in him when they already had Alex Smith, and it looked foolish at the time. But Andy Reid was the coach, and Andy Reid was like, oh, I can do something with this kid. He can do this X, Y, Z. I can come up with these plays, and we got speed. We got this receiver. We got this tight end. And they knew exactly how to create a culture and a system that was going to work for him. And that's really what the Commanders' responsibility is now they got Jaden Daniels, is really creating the culture and the system that he can thrive in. And that's what's important for all of these quarterbacks, and for any time you draft a guy, and you got to invest fully into them and making sure that what you're building is something that's going to be beneficial to them and not to the coach or to the organization. Because if it's not going to be beneficial to that quarterback, everybody else is going to suffer. The coach won't be around long, and the organization is going to falter and have to be back in a situation in a couple of years drafting the quarterback again. So I hope that Jaden is up for the task, is up for the challenge, but I think the responsibility is going to fall firmly on the Commanders to make sure that they play to his strengths and make sure that he can thrive in whatever system they come up with. And there's no reason to doubt him right now, but it's just a crazy thing that when it comes to football, and especially the quarterbacks, where you land and who you land with is just as important as just your ability and your ability to read a defense and to work hard. But he's proven that he's willing to do the work. It's just, are they going to make him do the work that's going to be the right kind of work?
Great job. Always appreciate it. Enjoy the conversation. Mr. Michael Lee on X on Twitter. And I would just click on to all of the stories he's written over the last year, because they're more interesting. They're not really reporter stories as much as they are columns with a lot of information and a lot of cool angles. I love the story that you wrote back. I can't even remember when you wrote it, about who's playing football and where players are coming from.
Mississippi.
Yeah. And well, that would be the Mississippi one. Exactly. Hey, thanks. Hope you're well.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on. Appreciate it, man.
All right. That is it for the show today. Thanks to Michael Lee. Thanks to Warren Sharp. Back tomorrow.